This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Journey to East Lan, The Lessons of Don Juan, by Carlos Castaneda.
12. A Battle of Power. Thursday, December 28th, 1961. We started on a journey very early in the morning. We drove south and then east to the mountains. Don Juan had brought gourds with food and water. We ate in my car before we started walking.
"Stick close to me," he said. "This is an unknown region to you, and there's no need to take chances. You're going in search of power, and everything you do counts. Watch the wind, especially towards the end of the day. Watch when it changes direction and shift your position so that I always shield you from it."
"What are we going to do in these mountains, Don Juan?"
"You're hunting power."
"I mean, what are we going to do in particular?"
"There's no plan when it comes to hunting power. Hunting power or hunting game is the same. A hunter hunts whatever presents itself to him. Thus, he must always be in a state of readiness. You know about the wind, and now you may hunt power in the wind by yourself. But there are other things you don't know about, which are, like the wind, the center of power at certain times and at certain places. Power is a very peculiar affair," he said. "It's impossible to pin it down and say what it really is. It's a feeling that one has about certain things. Power is personal. It belongs to oneself alone. My benefactor, for instance, could make a person mortally ill by merely looking at him. Women would wane away after he'd set eyes on them. Yet he didn't make people sick all the time, but only when his personal power was involved."
"How did he choose who to make sick?"
"I don't know that. He didn't know it himself. Power's like that. It commands you, and yet it obeys you. A hunter of power entraps it, and then stores it away as his personal finding. Thus, personal power grows, and you may have the case of a warrior who has so much personal power that he becomes a man of knowledge."
"How does one store power, Don Juan?"
"That, again, is another feeling. It depends on what kind of a person the warrior is. My benefactor was a man of violent nature. He stored power through that feeling. Everything he did was strong and direct. He left me a memory of something crushing through things. And everything that happened to him took place in that manner."
I told him that I couldn't understand how power was stored through a feeling.
"There's no way to explain it," he said after a long pause. "You have to do it yourself."
He picked up the gourds with food and fastened them to his back. He handed me a string with 8 pieces of dry meat strung on it and made me hang it from my neck.
"This is power food," he said.
"What makes it power food, Don Juan?"
"It's the meat of an animal that had power, a deer, a unique deer. My personal power brought it to me. This meat will sustain us for weeks, months, if need be. Chew little bits of it at a time, and chew it thoroughly. Let the power sink slowly into your body."
We began to walk. It was almost 11 a.m. Don Juan reminded me once more of the procedure to follow.
"Watch the wind," he said. "Don't let it trip you. And don't let it make you tired. Chew your power food and hide from the wind behind my body. The wind won't hurt me. We know each other very well."
He led me to a trail that went straight to the high mountains. The day was cloudy, and it was about to rain. I could see low rain clouds and fog up above in the mountains descending into the area where we were. We hiked in complete silence until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Chewing the dry meat was indeed invigorating, and watching for sudden changes in the direction of the wind became a mysterious affair to the point that my entire body seemed to sense changes before they actually happened. I had the feeling that I could detect waves of wind as a sort of pressure on my upper chest, on my bronchial tubes. Every time I was about to feel a gust of wind, my chest and throat would itch. Don Juan stopped for a moment and looked around. He appeared to be orienting himself, and then he turned to the right. I noticed that he was also chewing dry meat. I felt very fresh and wasn't tired at all. The task of being aware of shifts in the wind had been so consuming that I hadn't been aware of time. We walked into a deep ravine, and then up one side to a small plateau on the sheer side of an enormous mountain. We were quite high, almost to the top of the mountain. Don Juan climbed a huge rock at the end of the plateau and helped me up to it. The rock was placed in such a way as to look like a dome on top of precipitous walls. We slowly walked around it. Finally, I had to move around the rock on my seat, holding on to the surface with my heels and hands. I was soaked in perspiration and had to dry my hands repeatedly. From the other side, I could see a very large, shallow cave near the top of the mountain. It looked like a hall that had been carved out of the rock. It was sandstone, which had been weathered into a sort of balcony with two pillars. Don Juan said that we were going to camp there, that it was a very safe place because it was too shallow to be a den for lions or any other predators, too open to be a nest for rats, and too windy for insects. He laughed and said that it was an ideal place for men, since no other living creatures could stand it. He climbed up to it like a mountain goat. I marveled at his stupendous agility. I slowly dragged myself down the rock on my seat and then tried to run up the side of the mountain in order to reach the ledge. The last few yards completely exhausted me. I kiddingly asked Don Juan how old he really was. I thought that in order to reach the ledge the way he had done it, one had to be extremely fit and young. "I'm as young as I want to be," he said. "This again is a matter of personal power. If you store power, your body can perform unbelievable feats. On the other hand, if you dissipate power, you'll be a fat old man in no time at all." The length of the ledge was oriented along an east-west line. The open side of the balcony-like formation was to the south. I walked to the west end. The view was superb. The rain had circumvented us. It looked like a sheet of transparent material hung over the low land. Don Juan said that we had enough time to build a shelter. He told me to make a pile of as many rocks as I could carry onto the ledge, while he gathered some branches for a roof. In an hour, he had built a wall about a foot thick on the east end of the ledge. It was about 2 feet long and 3 feet high. He wove and tied some bundles of branches he had collected and made a roof, securing it onto two long poles that ended in forks. There was another pole of the same length that was affixed to the roof itself and which supported it on the opposite side of the wall. The structure looked like a high table with three legs. Don Juan sat cross-legged under it, on the very edge of the balcony. He told me to sit next to him, to his right. We remained quiet for a while. Don Juan broke the silence. He said in a whisper that we had to act as if nothing was out of the ordinary. I asked if there was something in particular that I should do. He said that I should get busy writing and do it in such a way that it would be as if I were at my desk with no worries in the world except writing. At a given moment, he was going to nudge me, and then I should look where he was pointing with his eyes. He warned me that no matter what I saw, I shouldn't utter a single word. Only he could talk with impunity, because he was known to all the powers in those mountains. I followed his instructions and wrote for over an hour. I became immersed in my task. Suddenly, I felt a soft tap on my arm and saw Don Juan's eyes and head move to point out a bank of fog about 200 yards away, which was descending from the top of the mountain. Don Juan whispered in my ear with a tone barely audible even at that close range. "Move your eyes back and forth along the bank of fog," he said.
but don't look at it directly. Blink your eyes, and don't focus them on the fog. When you see a green spot on the bank of fog, point it out to me with your eyes. I moved my eyes from left to right along the bank of fog that was slowly coming down to us. Perhaps half an hour went by. It was getting dark. The fog moved extremely slowly. At one moment, I had the sudden feeling that I detected a faint glow to my right. At first, I thought that I had seen a patch of green shrubbery through the fog. When I looked at it directly, I didn't notice anything. But when I looked without focusing, I could detect a vague greenish area. I pointed it out to Dong Huan. He squinted his eyes and stared at it. "Focus your eyes on that spot," he whispered in my ear. "Look without blinking until you see." I wanted to ask what I was supposed to see, but he glared at me as if to remind me that I shouldn't talk. I stared again. The bit of fog that had come down from above hung as if it were a piece of solid matter. It was lined up right at the spot where I'd noticed the green tint. As my eyes became tired again and I squinted, I saw, at first, the bit of fog superimposed on the fog bank, and then I saw a thin strip of fog in between that looked like a thin, unsupported structure, a bridge joining the mountain above me and the bank of fog in front of me. For a moment, I thought I could see the transparent fog, which was being blown down from the top of the mountain, going by the bridge without disturbing it. It was as if the bridge were actually solid. At one instant, the mirage became so complete that I could actually distinguish the darkness of the part under the bridge proper, as opposed to the light sandstone color of its side. I stared at the bridge, dumbfounded. And then I either lifted myself to its level, or the bridge lowered itself to mine. Suddenly, I was looking at a straight beam in front of me. It was an immensely long, solid beam, narrow and without railings, but wide enough to walk on. Don Juan shook me by the arm vigorously. I felt my head bobbing up and down, and then I noticed that my eyes itched terribly. I rubbed them quite unconsciously. Don Juan kept on shaking me until I opened my eyes again. He poured some water from his gourd into the hollow of his hand and sprinkled my face with it. The sensation was very unpleasant. The coldness of the water was so extreme that the drops felt like sores on my skin. I noticed then that my body was very warm. I was feverish. Don Juan hurriedly gave me some water to drink and then splashed water on my ears and neck. I heard a very loud, eerie, and prolonged bird cry. Don Juan listened attentively for an instant and then pushed the rocks of the wall with his foot and collapsed the roof. He threw the roof into the shrubs and tossed all the rocks one by one over the side. He whispered in my ear, "Drink some water and chew your dry meat. We can't stay here. That cry was not a bird." We climbed down the ledge and began to walk in an easterly direction. In no time at all, it was so dark that it was as if there were a curtain in front of my eyes. The fog was like an impenetrable barrier. I'd never realized how crippling the fog was at night. I couldn't conceive how Don Juan walked. I held on to his arm as if I were blind. Somehow, I had the feeling I was walking on the edge of a precipice. My legs refused to move on. My reason trusted Don Juan, and I was rationally willing to go on, but my body was not, and Don Juan had to drag me in total darkness. He must have known the terrain to ultimate perfection. He stopped at a certain point and made me sit down.